Hello, thank you for joining me at Content Talks. This is Christina Halverson, your host. I am delighted to have with me today Mr. Daniel Eisens. Daniel is a content strategy manager at Campbell Ewald in Detroit. He has worked as the lead content strategist for Chevrolet. He's currently working also with Kaiser Permanente and the Center for Disease Control. Hi, Daniel.
Hi.
How's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fantastic. So, Daniel, how did we meet? I mean, I know Chris Moritz came to the Chris Moritz is your coworker at Campbell Ewald, and I think he was at the Content Strategy Consortium in 2009.
That is true.
Yes. And so, did he just introduce us, or how did we?
I think you and I actually connected. You saw a post that I had made at one point about the relationship between content management and content strategists, because I, for a long time while I was working on the Chevrolet account, I was spending a lot of time down in our content management department and figuring out how you kind of make that marriage work. And you and I reached out to each other, and we've kind of been fast friends ever since.
We hugged. There was a virtual hug that happened.
A virtual hug.
Yeah. If I read a post that I like, I do tend to sort of immediately either pick up the phone or email and just be like, hi, you're smart. How can we get you to write more? Because this is great.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, let's start there. I think that was sometime last year. But tell me, so you were working with the CMS team for Chevrolet. Tell me a little bit about what that project was and why you were down there so much.
Sure. Well, I was actually the first content strategist that was really brought onto the Chevy account, starting to take a look at how that Chevy.com and OEM site. Period, automotive manufacturing for the non-auto folks in the audience. An OEM site actually would serve customers better and help drive incremental sales. Mm-hmm. And there were some key metrics on that site that we wanted to try and drive. And it was moving from more of a flash-based site to more of a content-rich site
Just out of curiosity, I'm just interested in what those metrics were at the time.
The metrics we were trying to drive were more dealer visits, more request-a-quote activity, mm-hmm. And more build-your-own activity. So allowing people to kind of dive into the vehicle and actually build one out and price it, at which time they become what's called a qualified lead, which is where we kind of grab your email address and your address, and we're able to then contact and market to you.
Great. Go ahead.
It's driving that bottom line that, you know, eventually leads to sales, because some of the key metrics we were seeing is once we get you into the dealership, 70% of the time we can actually close the sale. So when we kind of allow the website to serve as a traffic generator tool for the dealership, we're helping drive incremental sales.
Great. And so they pulled you in as a content strategist. And what was the change in mindset? Like, what was the framework in which they're like, we need somebody to really focus on the content here?
You know, we were looking at just general usability testing, and all of the GM sites are actually on a templated based web service now called GMDS, which is the Global Master Divisional Site. So they are a series of web templates that allow for the design of different vehicle pages and things like that. And I was brought in specifically for the model year refresh portion of the site, which is where we kind of talk about all the different models in the Chevy lineup. And the goal of those pages is to just discuss all the different features and options. And we took a lot of user insights into the different types of vehicle people that purchase those vehicles, and we were creating specific content for them that relates both to their lifestyle elements, some of their personal behaviors, and some of their personal situations, which is partly what got me really interested in the whole context thing that I've been talking about on the web.
Right. I want to finish sort of
sure.
talking a little bit about your work with CMS, but then that is really talking about your work in contextual consideration and content strategy is what we're excited to talk about. But tell me a little bit about what you were seeing when you were working with the CMS folks. I mean, this is a gigantic effort that's pulling in people doing research and user personas, and you're mm-hmm. moving from a flash-based site and, you know, creating all these new content modules. How did that relationship work?
The relationship for us was, you know, we worked very closely with our consumer insights and engagement folks. They're constantly doing user testing and doing focus groups and user groups to kind of grab the really important data about an automotive shopper. So when we talk with those folks, we get an idea of how they're using the web, what they're looking for in an automotive website, and the types of experiences that they need to make their ultimate decision of whether or not they want to buy a car or go test drive it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really small window when you're in market for a car, and the website is becoming a more and more a major component of it. So in that research, we find out what types of content these folks want to see in order to do the purchasing process. And mm-hmm. we tap a lot of different research data mines and things like that. So a lot of stuff from Forrester, ComScore, a lot of those other, you know, key data sites. So we'll grab that data and then take it back. We'll develop specific user personas for it. Chevy, it was actually at the time using five different cultures, everything from like modern mobiles to a lot of different just types of people, and looking at the types of situations that they have. And that's how, you know, part of it goes into their design philosophy, but also into what we want to present to them on the website. So in doing that, we had weekly meetings with the content management folks and the types of content that they are producing. It's everything from organizing video shoots and photo shoots at the same time to make sure that we're capturing the same, the best possible asset to use in multiple places. So shooting once for five or six different channels. So, you know, Chevy has a mobile site and Chevy has a, you know, a global site, and there's assets that need to go to the dealers. So when we're templating in that large content management system, we're making sure that, you know, everything is based on that really specific insight, and then we're capturing assets once to create the maximum amount of efficiency. And then working with all of our user data to determine that, yes, in fact, we have a have the right types of assets, and then we can write to the different personas that we've created for each of the different groups, because obviously when you're writing to a truck audience, you're using a very different type of language than somebody who's looking at a compact car.
And were you doing the writing? Were you overseeing a team of writers?
All the content strategy that we did for the Chevy site was something we created, an editorial platform and a publishing process. So that was something that I was very much involved in, creating kind of a layer of how we're going to get all this copy reviewed. I set up the individual copy docs for the writers, and those were then passed on to our creative team. Campbell Ewald's obviously a really large agency.
How many folks do you have?
We were, last time I checked, I think we were right around 1,000 people across. We have offices in San Antonio and Los Angeles and Detroit, and then satellite offices around the country for our different clients as well. So, mm-hmm. You know, in-house here in Detroit, I think we seat about 800. So the Chevy account at the time was obviously our largest account. And a lot of the creative team that we had for that particular project, I think the digital side of that project was right around between 50 and 60 people.
Wow.
So, and that includes account folks, but then you've got, you know, art directors and writers. So for the website as a whole, we kind of combined the Chevy catalogs and the website. So those writers were working on both pieces of the project. Whenever you're working with the automotive, you want to have a product information expert working in hand with the writers, as well as somebody from the content management team to make sure that all the assets that they need, or they need edited for the upcoming model year, or they need to have repurposed, are kind of part of that process. Mm-hmm. So it's a big hand-holding, large-scale organizational effort mm-hmm. that's always difficult to undertake when you're working with such a large site like that. Mm-hmm. But they're interesting challenges to have. And the writers actually are able to kind of look at all the different content strategy pieces we're putting together, so they know what assets they have available to them, you know, all the different claims and product information pieces that they're allowed to write into their copy, because there's a lot of legal disclaimers that obviously go into automotive copy.
Sure.
So we have all those documents kind of ready for them to go, and then they go through the editing chain that we set up, which was, you know, there was a big legal process in place before I obviously came on to the account to work on content strategy for the site. But then we kind of created different checks and balances to make sure that we were working within the proper tone and that we were hitting on all the key highlights for each of the personas. And then that obviously rolls into the publishing process as well.
Mm-hmm. So I have to say that, you know, there are a lot of kind of mega agencies, which is what our tiny little brain traffic consultancy calls you people, that are trying, they're sort of scrambling, trying to catch up with content strategy, trying to figure out where does this fit? Why is this different from writing? Why is this different from user experience design? Can't the content management people just kind of, you know, fill in the gaps here? You guys, frankly, are one of the only large agencies that I've come across that seems to have a relatively mature content strategy discipline. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I think there's definitely some. I think we're probably the only large shop that does a lot of traditional work. So when I say traditional, I'm thinking a lot of print and a lot of television as well. I mean, our interactive group is just growing leaps and bounds. But I think we've all been doing content strategy and user experience at Campbell Ewald for quite a while now. And I would say that when you compare us to other traditional agencies, we're definitely ahead of the curve when it comes to interactive and digital stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then our content strategy group has really been in place probably for about it's at least 3 or 4 years now that it's been an actual discipline that we've been titling our folks as content strategists. We've had content strategy specialists and we've had content strategy managers, and all of those disciplines really kind of grew out of a lot of really clever user experience folks that we've had who have kind of been leaders in the industry. The director of our interactive group right now is Dave Lineberry, who's, you know, been in the social space for quite a while, but has always been a champion for content strategy as well. So our group has always been, you know, one of the ones that have been kind of pushing things, and content strategy is something that our agency understands, and we're happy to be one of those big, large agencies that gets it.
Mm-hmm,
I think.
Mm-hmm. How have you seen, just with regards to client inquiry and buying patterns and the time to educate with regard to the value of content strategy, have you seen a shift in that over the last couple of years?
I have. I think you're seeing a lot of, we do a lot of government work here. We have the U.S. Navy and parts of the Center for Disease Control, obviously, which I'm doing a lot of work on now. I think government agencies as a whole are really starting to inquire a lot about content strategy. They have these large old sites. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of legacy data that is there. So I think that they see the natural attraction to wanting somebody who is capable, to have somebody who's capable of digging through all that old data.
Mm-hmm.
And help them govern it across a new site and a redesigned site. And I think there's a renewed interest in the you know, government sector right now that they want to have a more customer facing approach to everything. So content strategy is really important for them because in the past, it's just been, you know, let's make it brochureware and let's throw everything we have up on the web.
Because we can.
Why not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're trying to talk to a specific consumer group who might not have a postgraduate degree, they might not understand all of the content that you're throwing out there to them. So I'm seeing a lot of stuff from the government space.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously some of the larger clients that have a little more access to the growing amount of publishing space that they'll need, they're
mm-hmm.
asking about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then just introducing some of the smaller clients to it as well. You know, one of our smaller clients is Olympic Paint and Stain, and they really get content strategy. They want to be very progressive in the digital space. So that's something that we've brought to them this year as well. So it's kind of great to see both getting it. And I am seeing the ask for it grow.
Great. So part of what is also so interesting and exciting to me is that out of this environment and out of your experience, you are beginning to sort of take the lead in thinking about and forming ideas and principles around the importance of context in content mm-hmm. strategy. In fact, in Erin Cassane's new book, The Elements of Content Strategy, she actually shares one of your models around that. I wonder, can you kind of introduce that topic and sort of say, what is it that you're talking about? What is the challenge that you're seeing? How are you framing up when people talk about context? How are you framing that up?
Well, for me, the whole the whole context approach is really kind of growing out of our rapidly evolving web as we know it. You know, 16-year-olds are using their mobile phones as their primary browsing device. And, you know, especially when you get down to the localization level of different countries and things like that, I'm seeing just, I see writing on the wall, I guess, is probably the best way to describe it. And I want content to start focusing on two things primarily, and that's a user-specific situation, which is sort of what I really started looking at the entire context issue about a year ago to date, as a matter of fact, when I was going through the model year refresh activity on the Chevrolet site. I was seeing a lot of messaging being pushed towards me by clients and wanting to have a very specific tone based on a marketing claim. And what I was seeing in the research was that a lot of folks weren't really reacting to a marketing claim. They had specific situations that they were requiring content to answer. So that's how I wanted to frame the entire content strategy for a lot of the models that we were refreshing on that website. So I started looking first at different user situations that would align with the business goals of what our site owners wanted. And then I also was seeing a real need to look at personal behaviors, because I think personal behaviors affect a lot about what we do and how we're able to perceive things on the web. Actually, my original career path of choice was to be a cognitive neuroscientist.
That scares me.
Doesn't it? I don't know too many people who ended up in writing who started in neuroscience. I think my love for writing always just kind of won out, and I ended up going to journalism school instead of pursuing. I had started as a cognitive neuroscience student and did a lot of my initial work in neurology and looking at how the brain functions and how personal behaviors and computing has an effect on that. I mean, that's really where my interest in personal behaviors and how we consume data on the web and everywhere else really, really takes shape. So when you blend personal behaviors with situations, I think you have a really good framework for personal behavioral context and situational behavioral context, which are, you know, when you blend those two things together, I think you have a really good formula for creating a content template that can be modified, especially now that we're moving into the era of HTML5 and CSS3. There's really good media calls that we can put forward, and this kind of starts to get into responsive web design a little bit as well, which is why I'm really excited to see Ethan Marcotte's new book coming out here in May. To kind of combine responsive web design with content templating and context strategy to really serve content in a different way that allows users to kind of determine what they want to see. And we can start to have some predictive behavior about the types of content we should be serving them based on device and also based on their personal habits and their personal behaviors, because there's a lot of data that we can collect from users that's available on their browser without being too sneaky about it. And we can serve them content in a different way that helps create meaning. Because I think at the end of the day, our true clients as content strategists are the users and not necessarily, our clients. They're not walking wallets. They're people who have a goal and they have situations that they need to have content to answer and have content to address. And that's where I really think content strategy should be moving as the web begins to change and we start to see user habits and user behaviors change with the onset of technology and the exponential explosion of mobile. I want to swim out a little bit further from, I guess, what's being called traditional content strategy, just auditing and coming up with big plans, but also, serving our users in the best possible ways as well.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this question, because I this is something I run into a lot when I speak at conferences. I get feedback that's like, oh my gosh, this is great. Content strategy is so important. I'll never be able to put any of this to work in my organization. And I think that part of the problem there is that so many organizations, I don't know if you see this with your clients being a large agency, they haven't really figured out even the basics of Web 1.0. And I would take a lot of the government agencies that we see online as being perfect case studies of that, right? That they're still just kind of piling content on the web because they can. So when we're trying to figure out just sort of the basics of what should the content be, what is going to serve the users, how are we going to structure it in a way that makes sense, you know, how are we going to get this moving throughout our organization and take care of it over time? I mean, if you are pushing towards this, we have to look ahead, and everybody else is dragging behind with all of this legacy content and a lack of internal infrastructure, you know, where is the leap going to take place? Like, what can the content strategists do to kind of bring these folks along and even begin to try to catch them up with where they need to be, which is what you're talking about?
Yeah, and that's a great critique and a good question actually as well. To kind of prove my point out, I'm just sandboxing. I'm actually redesigning one of my personal sites, which is actually a food blog, and I'm working on all of the different content templates and the contextual pieces that I'm talking about now, just to be kind of a case study for it. But to answer that question more directly, you know, government obviously is a big brochure where I like to call it the Web 1.0 mindset,
exactly,
of thinking.
Exactly.
And to catch them up, I think it's really just we have to, as content strategists, we have to really kind of marry up with a metric. And it's really just a case-by-case basis, I think, to start to convince people that, you know, if we start looking at user behaviors and what they expect on the web, and the best ways of reaching them based on other case studies that are available out there and data that's available out there, we can start to prove things out piece by piece. You know, one good example that we've done at Campbell Leopold is we've been working with a Lead Safe campaign for the Environmental Protection Agency. And it's basically what that program is there, it's a new requirement now that a contractor has to become certified in lead safe practices, which really requires them to take a course, and it costs their own money to take the course to have this certification, or they're facing fines.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the ultimate goal of driving people to sign up for these classes, and we chose a microsite approach for that because digging back through other EPA content, it would be difficult to find that. So we basically paired the site up with the advertising campaign that we had in market to reach these contractors, and then we were able to segment it out. So we're going to communicate to large contractors in one way. We'll communicate to small independent contractors in a totally different way, because they have a different, the large contractors, it's no big deal for them. They're going to follow every government guideline that comes out just to make sure that they stay certified. But there's less incentive for the small independent handyman type contractor to go out and get that certification, because that comes out of his bottom line at the end of the day, and he mm-hmm. doesn't have corporate support to do it. So you have to message to him in a very different way. So, mm-hmm. you know, is our messaging going to be, you know, slightly more intimidating or more threatening, or, you know, you're facing really big fines. And if it's a major and, you know, non-compliance issue, you could face jail time. So, you know,
so just take that
small contractor. And then you've got the general public to educate as well. So I think when you can kind of tie things back to metrics, and tie it down to an actual response model, I'm a big believer that you shouldn't be doing anything digitally that you can't measure. So for me, at the end of the day, really working hand in hand with an analytics person and then building a case study for every content strategy project you're doing, no matter how small. And that was a small project. So it's a microsite, and then it's tied into a relatively low dollar advertising campaign at the end of the day. And being able to tie it back to a metric and then building a case study around that, I think there's a lot of potential to really show clients that, yes, this works. And then we can walk that out to other clients and say, you know, when we have the right consumer insights and we understand things about your users, we can message to them in a very specific way. And this all comes from content strategy. Yes, the creative's important. Yes, the writing is important. But it's all fed by this content strategy thing. And everybody says you can't really prove out ROI on content strategy, but I think you can prove out ROI on a sound program that's backed by a really sharp strategy.
Mm-hmm. One of the challenges that we have, that we face at Brain Traffic when we enter into a new project, because we share that if you can't measure something, then it's just a nice to have, right? Yeah. And that's not what we need online. That's not what your users need online. And it's not working for, it's not doing anything for your business. But one of the challenges that we face is that we go in and we ask for metrics. And even some of these really large organizations, they're either not collecting them, they're not paying attention to the right ones, or if we ask for user research, we get, oh, we already know what our users want. We get that a lot.
Sure.
So, you know, and so it is a matter of kind of slowly starting to sell in the idea, too, that, look, you've got to have some kind of a baseline if you're going to measure any kind of growth or success. Do you run into that with clients when you walk through the door and they're like, okay, we need to get going and we need to launch our new initiative by, you know, 4 months from now or whatever. Yeah. And we have no baseline metrics. What, do you guys face that at all?
Oh, absolutely. And you would think if you're hiring out a large advertising agency, that's going to be, you're going to have some baseline metrics and some things, but I mean, the same as you. I mean, we face those challenges every day, or the metrics that they've been measuring have been the wrong metrics.
Exactly.
And you don't want them to necessarily feel like they've been misled, or that they've been, you know, especially if it's in-house, we want them to feel like we can make these changes, but then we have to start from scratch, really. And we're kind of making a hypothesis, is like, what's the key metric that's going to matter the most to you guys? And that's always kind of the come to Jesus meeting for me at the beginning of the day. Is every single content strategy document I produce for somebody, I like to have the site goals right at the top of every document I do, whether it's a publishing process or it's the content audit or it's a qualitative analysis. You're saying that these are the goals of your site. I'm using that lens to look at everything that we're going to do. So, you know, that for a lot of clients is a little bit shocking, and it's kind of scary because they need to move into a new territory and start looking at, you know, everybody used to think time on site was such a great metric. Well, if you're spending 15 minutes on the site, that could be very well because you just haven't seen the call to action and you don't know what you're supposed to do and you're frustrated.
Yep.
So for, you know, that's definitely an educational thing that we're still seeing happen. I'm still educating clients, and you know, that's something that I think will always be our job, because I think as content strategists, it's really our role to kind of keep up on all those different metrics and try and determine what's best for our clients based on what their real goals are at the end of the day. If it's an educational thing, you might want to measure time on site, but if you're really just trying to move them down to the process of building a vehicle or going to find your local dealership, the content needs to work in a really different way.
Mm-hmm. This is kind of the last question I want to ask you. So the work that you're talking about doing is so comprehensive and just, you know, sounds like it's offering this just wide range of insights to the content strategist, to the user experience design team, to the CMS team. I mean, to everybody who's involved in building the site. What happens after launch? Like, what is the content strategist role in terms of planning for after launch? I don't know how many accounts you guys are just, you know, supporting almost as internal teams full time. But if you're doing a project for someone and you are helping them to launch and you're handing off all this documentation, what tools are you giving them to kind of take care of and evolve their content strategy and how they are implementing that, you know, across all these different platforms?
Sure. You know, regards to the handoff period, I always like to leave, I call it my leave behind documentation. So it's almost like if at the end of the day, you know, this relationship ends and you have to start taking care of this on your own, or you need to transition it to somebody else, I always, I try and do a little bit of forecasting as well. So it's slightly predictive, but it's always tied back to the analytics reports and what we've established those early site goals as being. So that'll always have a metric attached to it. And we'll, you know, it'll look, you know, 3 months down the road, if the data is doing this, we need to revisit it. And maybe it's light editing of the content. Maybe it's a different call to action. Maybe it's user testing. So what I always recommend, and depending on the size and scope of the site, you know, I'll recommend post-launch testing, A/B copy testing, or even, you know, just moving some more things to video if we're seeing more demands for those things. I like to really do that post-mortem type of a situation where we start to really look at the monthly reports and sit down with the clients and actually really discuss everything that we've seen going on in those reports and then make some recommendations based on what we've seen and based on what we think is coming down the pipe. I think one thing that I like to do with clients is really start to understand just how much their site or their product will change. And, you know, this is looking at the advertising end of things, but just how much is gonna change with their business moving down the road. And then we try and forecast for that. What are your content needs going to be? What's the proper way to edit it if we're not seeing the lift that we want or the result that we want? And, you know, what are some options that we can try? So I always try and do that in my initial, you know, kind of write up about the delivery is I try and plan 6 months out. So I'm not necessarily the one doing all the content planning, but I'll make recommendations based on, you know, what your user habits are and how they're consuming the content once we've seen it. So generally, I'm not in that process, you know, full time. That's something that the account team will measure. And obviously, with advertising, it's very campaign based, but generally, if we've had a handoff, like we've worked with some clients where we've helped them establish internal publishing teams. So we'll step back in and help them review their process, help them understand what's working with their publishing process and what's not, and how they can plan for content moving forward.
Excellent. Well, hey, we're about out of time, but this has been amazing. Thank you.
My pleasure. It's always nice to talk with you.
Absolutely. And people should definitely visit your blog. And your blog is Daniel Eisens, EIZANS.com. And also Daniel Eisens on Twitter. And I expect a book from you soon, sir.
I hope so. I think hopefully this little case study I've been working on I'm hoping to submit it and we'll see what happens.
Excellent.
One step at a time.
Yeah, no, lots of steps right now. Oh, wait, that's me.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, and we will be seeing you at Confab.
Yes, we will. Content Strategy Prom, as I like to call it.
Yeah, Daniel, you came up with that, and that has people have run with it like crazy. So, all right, well, thanks so much, and thank you, listeners, for joining on this episode of Content Talks, and we will talk next week.